Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, it's a real pleasure this afternoon for me to share with you the thoughts I entitled, Become an Architect of Change, Maximize Your Social Capital. You know, being a live radio and web stream talk show host for these past 2 years really has been a natural extension of my lifelong love of giving speeches, presentations, and indeed even grabbing the microphone as a kid back in drama class. You know, radio really is my 5-to-9 life, though, that 9-to-5 being in consulting and business coaching, where I'm typically introduced through a list of academic credentials and prior corporate affiliations. Well, one thing that's seldom mentioned in those introductions is that I'm a native of the Midwest, and up to my early 30s, except for a year in California, I was educated and worked primarily from a base between Indianapolis and Michigan. Once a Midwesterner, always a Midwesterner. And when one of the readings of my later in life doctorate program was a book called Bowling Alone, it indeed got my attention. And no, this isn't about Laverne and Shirley's popular pastime. Bowling Alone, The Collapse and Revival of American Community, is a 500-page masterful work written by Robert Putnam, a Harvard sociologist. It's filled with compelling literature, data, and charts, yes, after an engineer's heart, I must admit, about the shifts in America's social structure. Up until the late 1990s, believe it or not, bowling was the single most popular exercise activity in the United States that crossed generations, genders, professions, and social hierarchy. People used to bowl in leagues each week, particularly after work, leaving their titles at the door. Whereas data shows that the number of bowlers are relatively the same today, Americans now bowl alone or in very small groups. And some don't even go to the bowling alley alone, but use their electronic Wii Fit system at home. This seemingly small phenomena symbolizes to me a significant social change, and Putnam repeatedly fingers how we have become increasingly disconnected from one another. Whether you think in terms of the PTA, church groups, VFW, bridge and knitting clubs, personally signing Christmas cards and your thank you notes, kids joining the high school band, or homespun events for political parties, or even that picnic at the local town hall, many of those long-standing Americana institutions have slid or disintegrated. For example, do you know what the single largest dues-paying membership organization is in the United States today? Indeed, it's AARP, which some might not be surprised by given the shift in demographics and certainly us baby boomers moving in that direction. But the significance of this is that AARP doesn't have a single regional office, operating chapter, or service that involves face-to-face or group meetings. Yet people pay dues to belong, and I put that in quotes, belong. In 1960, 63% of Americans of voting age participated in the presidential election, whereas by 1996, the percentage had slipped to 49%. While most Americans still claim a serious religious commitment, church attendance is down roughly anywhere from 40 to 50% from where it was in the 1950s, and the number of Americans who attend public meetings of any kind dropped 40% between 1973 and 1994. Even that one stable community norm of life has shifted. One in five Americans moves once a year, while two in five expect to move in 5 years. Robert Putnam claims that statistics like these portray a U.S. population that is increasingly isolated and less empathetic towards its fellow citizens. So, in other words, are we then more often angrier and less willing to unite in communities or as a nation? Well, quite frankly, you can listen to weekly syndicated talk radio if you want an answer to that question. And, of course, I'm here on the weekend, by the way, which is a different format. While this phenomena has been named years before as social capital, no one before Putnam so deftly diagnosed that the probable harm that these broken bonds or the lost social capital have wreaked havoc on our physical and civic health. Nor, on the other side, has anyone before exalted the fundamental power of social capital to create a society that's happy, healthy, and safe. Now, I'd like you to think about your professional day and how significant attention is often given to financial capital, in other words, cash and investments, asset capital, meaning materials, work in process, inventory, bricks and mortar, and hopefully more today than perhaps in the past, human capital, the people that add value to bring forward products and services. But is anybody talking about social capital? So let me offer a quick clarification of those terms. Social capital comes in two forms, bonding and bridging. Bonding social capital, for that, envision a work group or your family unit with tight associations or ties, open sharing of information, loyalty, maybe a galvanized common purpose, taking care of, protecting, and standing up for one another. The members are really bonded together. Now, bridging social capital involves brokerage. A broker spans or bridges across networks and thus has fast access to knowledge, contacts, and resources. In short, a clear competitive advantage or power by connecting multiple sources. Research will show that those with high bridging social capital typically get promoted faster, earn higher salaries and bonuses, and are more creative and enjoy greater learning, and can move faster then to reach objectives, which of course translates to cost. Now, is one type of social capital better than another? You know, truly it depends. Bonding social capital can provide greater collaboration. It facilitates collective action, in other words, everyone moving in the same direction almost organically. And typically, bonding social capital affords greater member commitment, health, happiness, and longevity, believe it or not. But the ties that bind can also blind. That's why perspectives outside our usual circles, in other words, bridging, can be vital to keep us honest with ourselves. Those who love us dearly may not be able to speak the truth or be objective or know how to support us when we want to change, despite their best of intentions. They may not want us to change, as it really might upset the apple cart of the group. So, this isn't an either-or, regardless, as there are absolute advantages to having bonding social capital within your core network, but then bridging social capital between your core network to other networks. Remember, too, that not all ties between people are created or maintained equally. Whether spending your social capital through bonding or bridging, which is good news, by the way, because spending it actually creates more social capital, keeping up that Christmas card list, or in this day and age, responding to messages through LinkedIn or Facebook, all require the single resource we often don't have enough of and we just can't go buy more of. And what is that? Time. There are trade-offs. Robert Putnam and many organizational development consultants, yours truly included, of course, argue that social capital really matters, that a whole range of social good, including education, child welfare, safe neighborhoods, economic prosperity, health, personal satisfaction, and even our vibrant democracy depend on our interconnectedness among citizens, or in the context of business, amongst company members. As nonprofit leaders know, charitable giving comes most from those who have connections to and a stake in the community. Volunteerism, by the way, is not a substitute for politics and advocacy, but rather that the person who is politically interested is also one who's likely to volunteer. Now, I have to admit that Putnam's work has been really hotly contested in academic and practitioner circles, and in fact, many argue that the organizations of old have rightfully been replaced with the new, flatter, faster, quicker, smarter channels, and that we do have more specialized support groups, we participate in spiritual practices as opposed to just formalized religion, and that truly we take advantage of virtual communities with chat rooms. And we know that technology channels also allow us to keep tabs on our remote friends and family, plus facilitate and accelerate this global business connectedness. But you know, don't you feel there's something rather eerie going on with the escalating use, never mind the siphoning of our time related to social networking and media tools? And if not treated carefully, my point is, could they perhaps be more like junk food that fools us into thinking we're getting real nutrition to build lasting relationships? My opinion is that neighborhoods without sidewalks or limited use of them, homes without front porches but sequestered backyards, and people glued to BlackBerries when they used to talk to one another on airplanes or pay attention in meetings, and maybe even to some of us guest speakers, that really things have changed in this landscape of our relationships. Add in that particularly amongst the youth, people are texting more and more, which reads bits of 160 characters. They're not even calling to talk to one another on their cell phones. Now, to be sure, social capital can be used malevolently. In other words, to restrict employment opportunities for those outside one's own group, for example, or to demonize people unjustly and spur battles against real or imagined enemies. But because social capital also serves as a resource for many good activities that impact our personal and business lives, I believe we should be concerned about its decline. So this is where I want to go with my remarks today, to the positive power of social capital. Networks, in other words, that are reinforced by relationships, trust, shared experiences, and giving, not giving and taking, which we often talk about here on this radio show. Many organizations aspire to me in this place, connected, collaborating in a community for people to help one another, and oh, by the way, become personally fulfilled and probably have a lot of fun in the process. What really got my attention when I read Robert Putnam's book in 2004 was how the wake-up call around this unraveling of civil society, in other words, philanthropy, community involvement, and political action, people really caring about causes and taking action, that this was unraveling with very similar symptoms inside business. In fact, this hit me like a ton of bricks and significantly then guided the kind of research that I've done on leaders of high-impact change and my approach, quite frankly, even to this radio show. Company sports leagues? Quite frankly, gone. Celebrating birthdays in the office? Probably more the exception, not the rule. Buying a colleague a cup of coffee? Which, frankly, in manufacturing and engineering circles, it's an absolute exchange of gold between supervisors and workers? Nope. Most people have grabbed a coffee as they go through the drive-thru on their way in, never mind paying $5.35 for it. Carpooling? Well, how could we do that? I have to come in early and work late, plus I need to do my voicemail while I drive. Company picnics with family members? What, with our family schedule? And then, of course, one of my pet peeves, networking organizations that are about pushing business cards and 30-second elevator speeches like a speed dating event. Please. And you know, even eating in the new company cafeteria, really sitting down with colleagues to enjoy lunch instead of buying a sandwich and returning to eat alone, or bowl alone, at your desk or in your car between appointments. So, you know, is there any surprise that today the number one reason people aren't happy in the work environment, 42% in fact in a recent survey, and the next reason was only 10%, is that they don't feel like they have a voice or they're being heard. People are lost and unconnected. So social capital is thin as ice inside organizations, and while many of us hope it's replaced by connections outside, I don't know that we can be so sure in this day and age. It requires people really to have the hours of the day not tied up away from their family and friends, and let alone, of course, they're wanting to find personal downtime in the mix. So have you ever thought about why the rumor mill moves faster than any tops-down communication inside an organization? It's absolutely fundamental. Information moves freely through trusted networks, and that means the wrong as well as the right information. It's that know who, thus, that gets you what you need. In my prior life inside of corporate America, I was one of those pathological mavericks attracted to leading really big, messy change initiatives. For example, speeding up the development of a new car by building the prototype cars at the plant versus in the lab, and with everyone, including my boss at the time, saying it just couldn't be done. Or there was a time, a flagship Florida operation that I was part of, that we convinced 5,000 people that uprooting their families and moving to Connecticut was a good thing, while still shouldering some key deliverables to a vital U.S. Department of Defense customer. Or one of the most challenging, and thought to be totally psychotic by most of my peers at the time, was my leading the way for a cross-divisional merger of a large and profitable P&L with an then underperforming wicked stepsister division. Now, while I knew and I believed it was the right thing for the total corporation, who was kidding who? This was actually an acquisition in sheep's clothing, us being acquired. Well, my list goes on. Common to each of these quests and the places that us serial architects of change go first is to understand the superstructure and the infrastructure of an organization based on the flow of information. This is not the formal organizational chart, nor necessarily the who knows what, or who knows how. We get positioned quickly amongst the who knows who. In other words, we foster to collaboration to allow going successfully into uncharted territory, that change, then access the most core what and the how. Again, who knows who. And you know, folks, that's social capital, and it gives access to knowledge and influence quickly for lasting change. So again, this isn't just about the network or the links that connect people on a grid. particularly for outsiders or those of you that may be new to your organization, it's about how to tune in to what is moving across the grid. Discovering, understanding, and indeed truly respecting and honoring the power of the relationships, trust, and shared history between the people in an organization. And then getting tuned in quickly and deliberately to where there might be gaps or where there's some negative noise that needs to be dealt with too. We all know organizations that are rich with positive social capital. You know, you can feel it when you enter the building or the group. There's a buzz and energy, passion, creativity, openness, even a lightheartedness, yet seriousness of purpose. And you know, there's also room for very human behavior, making mistakes, forgiving, challenging, confronting, and laughing, even at ourselves. So the real power then of tapping social capital rests in our ability to influence, to enable integration, and also inspire inclusion. And this is as opposed to that inadvertent or deliberate exclusion. And lastly, an often misunderstood word, live in reciprocity. And by this, I mean how giving and helping someone is not done with an expectation to get or give back immediately, or maybe even ever, but knowing that deep down that sometime in the future, your open investment of support, time, money, or ideas in the community will come back to you in a profoundly important way. And perhaps not through the person that you helped, but someone to whom they passed the baton. I jumped at the chance recently to offer the opening remarks for a new organization to help each member really expand the collective circle of our impact. It also gave me the chance to surprise a couple attendees, in fact, the five women I'd invited to come along with me, and share some great examples of the power of social capital. Now, they knew me well enough to know and expect some surprises. So, for example, Marty Briscoe of Predictive Index of Arizona, who's been on our show, by the way. Marty's a fellow organizational development and assessment consultant and understands completely the power of giving it all away and trusting something big will come on the return. Marty came to my rescue last year and pro bono added 25 behavior profiles into a major contract I had with a large government defense organization. The client's participation behavior, by the way, not mine, although Marty, frankly, is a masterful job of keeping me off the ceiling as we transition this job to a much higher level of activity. She's keeping me off the ceiling as we perhaps deal with a slower than average speed demon nature that I'm used to having. Secondly, Sandy Mumy is the Director of Business Operations for the Carondelet Foundation here in Tucson. She introduced me to Marty. Hats off to Sandy as she allows me to completely be me, as irreverent and redheaded as I can get at times. It seems like most of our bonding lately has been around avoiding exhaustion from the day-to-day and figuring out ways to be smarter than the average bear with our time, but trust me, it really works. Sandy backs me up when I miss a meeting every now and then, and I would absolutely do the same for her. Thirdly, Gina Minert of Ruby Cross Limited is relatively new to our area, and you should see her in action leading a focus group or helping companies get to the real feelings of their customers. Gina and I met through a referral generation organization that's all about bridging social capital. In other words, giving other people access to your treasured Rolodex. She came up to me and said, "Something tells me I need to know you." And I've determined, frankly, that's one of the best pickup lines I've ever heard. Seriously, though, I have a tremendous respect for Gina's expertise and ability to listen, and her flashy British accent will keep your attention in the mix. I made reference earlier to nonprofit leaders, and one high on my list is Karen Pomeroy, founder of Equine Voices Horse Rescue and Sanctuary. My husband Ted and I truly, we've lost our southwestern marbles, as I said, 2 summers ago when we bought a 13-year-old Medicine Hat paint horse named Chappie. Now, this was after Karen very carefully talked Ted out of adopting a horse too much for us to handle. One in special need and care, having been rescued by the horrors of the Premarin industry by Karen's team. She and her volunteers are dedicated to saving these amazing animals and honoring them with a peaceful life for the remaining years. Now, Karen's efforts, though, profoundly also include educating women on the risk of Premarin, which is a drug clinically proven to cause cancer, yet still is available on the market. What Karen is doing takes not just faith and business acumen to mobilize volunteers and benefactors through bonding and bridging social capital, my points earlier, but she also embodies a perseverance and courage to walk square on the line of sight of big money of the global pharmaceutical industry. And finally, my example, Dr. Garen Thurston of Partners in Animal Wellness Services, PAWS, which is a veterinary practice that integrates Western and Eastern methodologies to care for our four-legged furry family members. They have a state-of-the-art surgery, rehabilitation, and pet wellness center with a really top-notch staff. And in fact, I personally feel better just going to their center. Garen and my family have been celebrating recently, along with her husband, Dr. Randy Aronson, indeed the radio pet vet who precedes our show here on Saturdays, because my family's 11-year-old black Labrador, Robbie, is miraculously waltzing and wagging around now, barking and trying to con food from all of us again at the dinner table. Back in December, he couldn't even lift up his head and was slipping and sliding when walking, a condition traced to spiral arthritis and thoughts to be irreversible nerve damage. Well, Garen, Randy, and others at PAWS changed that course for us. Now, I know this sounds like yet another enthusiastic referral and endorsement from a radio talk show host, but quite frankly, for me, it goes much deeper than that. Garen and I first met a year ago on the day that we carried our 14-year-old golden retriever, Piper, for the last time. With amazing empathy, poise, and compassion, Garen helped us to set Piper free. And we shed tears in a flurry of spiritual joy together as Piper lifted her head one last time. She smiled, waggled her big old tongue, and with very clear eyes seemed to say, "Thanks for a great life, and catch you at the pearly gates," before sighing and resting her head in my lap for the last time. This is what I mean by trust and a precious shared experience. Something that no one will ever take away from Garen and me, nor likely replicate in a similar fashion. True bonding social capital. You've often heard me on this radio show say this, and I truly believe it, that you can get anything you want in your life so long as you help enough other people get what it is that they want. And whether through bonding or bridging social capital, we should all count our blessings and protect with gratitude our relationships and consider ways to carefully open up to more authentic connections with others. So in that spirit, particularly when you are within groups of people at work, business meetings, in the community, or even family gatherings, I'd really like to challenge you to trade up in your interactions and start with, "And how is it I can help you?" And don't worry, you won't be apprehended for trading business cards by a scout like me. It's completely allowed and encouraged, but I have a hunch that you'll net much bigger gain through connections, collaborations, and community. And who knows, maybe the next meeting in that group will also be at a bowling alley. And with that, I hope you enjoyed those remarks and all the best as you look to maximize your social capital and become an architect of change.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.